The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, some actual J-League football was played on Saturday. We'll talk about that off the top of the episode. And then we will preview our final two clubs before the big kickoff on Friday night.
Yeah, it was great to have some football back. It's a shame that Vanfer Kofu's quadruple or whatever they could go for this year is not on. But yeah, it was great football. I enjoyed the game. It wasn't maybe the most exciting one, but it was great. Just great to have some football back because it's been so long since we've seen any sort of J-League action.
Absolutely, yeah. Kofu will just have to settle for the Asian Champions League trophy. Unfortunately, they missed out on the Super Cup on Saturday. And, well, yes, one of the combatants in that game, of course, the defending J1 champions, Yokohama F. Marinos, will be put under the microscope on this episode in part two as we wrap up our previews ahead of the new campaign. But, yes, the National Stadium, a beautiful sunny day on Saturday after we definitely had some weather over the two previous days. The capital was hit by a pretty extensive snowfall late in the week, but yes, Saturday dawned bright and sunny, and yes, F. Marinos, well, they didn't really put on much of a show, did they, Sam? But ultimately, goals from Elber and Takuma Nishimura were enough. Elber scoring on the half hour, and Nishimura just past the hour after Peter Utaka was credited with Kofu's equaliser on the stroke of half time. It was just about enough, although the game did end in controversy with Kofu thinking they had scored a legitimate second goal. It was flagged by the linesman, and yes, ultimately that decision was not overturned. Kofu left disappointed and frustrated, but F. Marinos left with the trophy.
Yeah, it turns out that, well, it was the second moment of slight controversy, I suppose, in the game, as VAR was back to its best, I suppose, for the first goal, taking forever to determine whether it was onside for Utaka's goal. He eventually got to the right decision, but yeah, at the end, I think everyone was kind of scratching their heads with the goal. Gattulio volleyed in terrific effort, but it was ruled out by the linesman, but nobody really saw a replay, nothing was given, there was no conversation about what was going on. I know Gattulio himself was onside, but it's been kind of cleared up afterwards that there was a challenge on Hatanaka from an offside player, so he was interfering with play. But yeah, Kofu fans were quite bemused as to what had gone on and why it was disallowed. So yeah, lack of communication really was the issue. So it's a shame that the game ended in that sort of fashion, but in the end, it was a fair result, and the correct call was made.
All right then. So F. Marinos getting off to a winning start, albeit against a J2 team that finished in the lower reaches of the second tier table in 2022. But they definitely reinforced their squad over the winter with the signing of Utaka. Just one example, as they will have to negotiate an Asian Champions League campaign later on this year. All right. So the two clubs that we're going to be previewing in this episode, Sam, will they could hardly be coming into this season in more contrasting ways. Yokohama FC, who are up first, of course, were promoted from J2 last year, and Yokohama F. Marinos are the defending champions. Now, I just happened to be leafing through a copy of a Soccer Digest in a bookstore yesterday afternoon, Sam, and wouldn't you know it, they had a kind of a predicted table section of the magazine where they'd polled a total of 30 either former players, media members, or football writers, and got them to predict their J1 table from first to 18th. And our two teams that were featured on this episode were, I guess you won't be surprised, were highlighted at both ends of the table. Of the 30 the members who were polled, 13 of them picked F. Marinos to finish top, and they had the most points of any club. And Yokohama FC were picked to finish bottom by 13 people as well. And yes, they had the lowest points total, obviously awarding a number of points for each position in the table. So I guess as we enter this campaign, and we're going to talk about these clubs in more detail, obviously, almost immediately, but does that kind of sit right with you? The defending champions are tipped to finish first, and one of the promoted teams are tipped to finish bottom?
It seems like the kind of lazy guess that you go with, oh, the last league winners will be favourites to win it, and the team that came up, the lowest ranked team, are going to be favourites to be bottom. And I'm not 100% sure it's going to shake out that way. The both teams are incredibly different to the way they were last year. Marinos, as we'll get onto, have lost a lot of key players from last year, including the MVP of last year, whereas Yokohama FC have essentially bought another couple of squads. So I don't know if we can completely go on that, but yeah, it's kind of what you'd expect from these sorts of predictions. And yeah, but what it is there wasn't a majority for any of them, so there is still a lot up in the air for each of these positions at the top and bottom of the league, which only bodes well.
Absolutely, as we well know, yes, the J1, the most unpredictable league in the world, or it definitely runs J2 close anyway. So, you never can tell on a season-to-season basis. All right, so joining us first to help us preview Yokohama FC is a first-time guest, and he made his debut on Extra Time towards the end of 2022. It's Manny Padovan, who is at Yokohama FSG on Twitter. And without any further ado, let's throw to our chat with Manny. And to help us preview Yokohama FC's return to J1, it's a big welcome to the podcast to first time guest Manny Padovan. Manny, welcome aboard. How are you?
Yeah, good. It's a bit rainy here today, but it feels like my home city of Manchester, so it's quite nice.
Excellent stuff. Yes. All right, then. So, before we dive into talking about your Yokohama FC's 2022 and look ahead to their 2023 campaign, Manny. Yes. As we do to all first time guests, when I remember, we want to find out a bit about your backstory, how you became interested in Japanese football, and how you became a Yokohama FC supporter.
Sure. I love football for a start. And when I was back home in the UK, I'd watch it in person regularly. I'm a season ticket holder at Manchester City for my sins. So then moving to Japan, I really missed that sort of live football atmosphere. And my wife is from Yokohama. So I thought, well, there's two teams in Yokohama. And I quite like the sort of the underdog. I like supporting the underdog. And I thought Yokohama FC would be the perfect choice for me. And they have a great stadium. You're really close to the action, and it's a really good atmosphere. So the few times I have been, I've been hooked ever since.
All right, then. So the City Football Group links didn't steer you in the direction of Yokohama F. Marinos, Manny?
Yeah, I know. People ask me about that, and I just couldn't quite bond to the Marinos for some reason. And the story behind Yokohama FC being a sort of Phoenix club really sort of resonated with me, especially because I've supported City since, before they were super rich. So I remember a time when we weren't doing all that well.
All right. Well, it's a real meeting of the minds on this episode, isn't it, Sam? We've got me, a Liverpool supporter, you, a United fan, and Manny hopping on board as a Manchester City supporter. So, it's going to be an interesting dynamic, I think, for the next 15 to 20 minutes. But, we get along quite well on a week-to-week basis, so I'm sure everything will be okay with Manny as well. So, I guess we better move on, Manny, before we this descends into fisticuffs. So, 2022, then, for your Yokohama FC. This year, 2023, will be just their fourth ever season in the top flight in their 23-year history. And after finishing bottom of the 20-team J1 in 2021, they returned at the first time of asking by finishing second behind Niigata. They started out like a house on fire, going unbeaten in their first 13 games, sputtering somewhat, but then reaching the halfway mark in third. They then battled Albirex for top spot the rest of the way, ultimately finishing 4 points adrift, but a comfortable 8 clear of third-placed Okayama. Korki Ogawa was the unqualified success of the season, winning the J2 Player of the Year and Golden Boot with his 26 goals. But Manny, who else stood out for you in 2022 to seal a return straight back to J1, making you the envy of so many teams like, Chiba and Omiya, who were former top flight mainstays but now find themselves mired in the second tier? So what was it that got you straight back up at the first time of asking?
Oh, that's a good question. I think our style of football was particularly suited to day two. And I mean, I know you've mentioned Ogawa, and it's hard not to mention him again. But his goals and just his work rate in XG was just phenomenal. And I think really, if we didn't have him in the team last season, I think we would have really, really struggled. Shunsuke was good when he played for us, and a few times, as was I think Hasegawa, was also really, really good. And Brodison, I know Brodison isn't great with his feet, but he sort of leads from the back. And when he's not in the team, we're definitely weaker.
Sam, how much of you did? How much of your Chimera FC did you see last year? And yeah, any other players other than the ones that Manny's mentioned stand out to you?
No, I didn't get to see a great deal of Yokohama FC, to be quite honest, but I'm quite interested. Last time we saw them at the end of their J1 season, they made a load of new signings. Towards the end, it was kind of too little too late, but you mentioned Brodersen. But what were Gabriel and Sala Mineiro like? Because they had a little bit of a bedding in period. I know Sala Mineiro particularly impressed us. Did they kind of continue that on into J2, and were they mainstays of this title push, of this promotion push, sorry?
Yeah, Gabriel especially. He's a really solid defender, and he's really, really good in the air, which helped us a lot with our tactic of sort of long balls from the back, and from defending as well. So he was really, really good. Mineiro was good, but he had a few injuries, so his play wasn't as consistent. But I definitely think the experience. And it sounds funny, but the experience and sort of dropping out from the J1 into the J2 helped sort of push to sort of go back up again. I think it's becoming apparent that it's not as easy to drop down and then jump immediately back up.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, I think you guys are. I mean, if you are becoming a yo-yo club, then you'll be the envy of so many others. Because, as I said, with a couple of the bigger names that I mentioned before, they just can't get back with even within a sniff of J1. But the fact that yeah, your Chimera FC have come straight back, and I mean, as we're going to come on to talk about the for a lot of people's predictions, you know, they're not particularly rosy
No.
for the club coming back up again this year. But I mean, at least you're back up in the top flight. You get to enjoy another season up here, and with the one relegation spot, well, maybe you know, it's not all doom and gloom, and maybe you can nudge 15th, which was the best ever finish in the no relegation season in 2020. So I think it's better to be a yo-yo club than to be mired in mid-table or worse in J2. So
Yeah.
yeah, I think it's terrific that they've been able to bounce back straight away, because I don't think, yeah, predictions were particularly rosy at this time last season that they would be able to do that. So
No.
yeah, fair dues. I think it's you know, and adds another derby to the slate. Of course, we've lost both of the Shizuoka clubs back down to J2 this year. So the fact that the Yokohama derby has been resuscitated for this year is great, and there'll be a couple of terrific games, no question. So Manny, let's talk about the transfers out of the club then. It's been a very busy winter, of course, for the club again. Unfortunately, the dramatic return to J1 of a sprightly 55-year-old striker, Kazuyoshi Miura, didn't materialise. He has joined a Portuguese second division club on loan. And yes, Shunsuke Nakamura retired at the end of 2022 at the age of 44 after a stellar 26-year career. But I don't know, Manny, are you actually relieved at these sideshows in inverted commas ending? I mean, the club, well, I mean, they've had a particular strategy that they followed. Their calling card has been King Kazu for so many years, and for a lot of us, it's like it's hard to take them seriously when they're just keeping this old man on the books just to, you know, to sell tickets and to sell shirts, where, you know, surely his space in the squad could have been taken up by a younger, more promising player. So I don't know what your thought, what side of the equation in that particular
Yeah.
case you fall on, but yeah, they're obviously two huge names to be leaving the club in the off season.
I mean, I think I think with King Kazu, you're right. He's what now, past 50, and I think the club is starting to realise that, especially with the management team. You know, it's starting to realise that it's too much, in a sense that it's sort of it's one gimmicky, and two he doesn't, in terms of play, he's not to the standard of J1 obviously, and even J2 is too much. So I think they've come to a realization that, you know, his years and years of experience, it might be useful in the back room in terms of on the pitch. I think it's time to bring in fresh blood. But with Shinsuke, he was relatively old, but he, you know, he could still contribute to the occasional game. And with that experience that he had abroad, I think it sort of really helped the team. And he's going to stick around the club, apparently, in a sort of a management coach role. So I think that experience will be really useful for us. But I think in terms of play time, I think it was definitely the right call for them to be moved on.
Yeah, just looking at the general outs overall, it looks like you've got rid of a lot of more older players, more fringe players, and like kind of Watanabe I'm looking at and Matsura. These were kind of mainstays last time you were in J1 where you kind of went with experience. Do you think this time around you're going for a more youthful approach and maybe a different way of approaching J1? And of all the outs actually, is there anyone there you consider a major loss for Yokohama going into this season?
Yeah, I mean, our ins and outs have been quite something this off season, but I think generally it's been good to get rid of the sort of the older players, and we have brought in a lot of youth, but we still kept a core of sort of older players with that experience of the J1 that they can form that core in the team. But in terms of sort of biggest loss, I think Masashi Kamikawa was the biggest loss. He only had sort of one season with us, but he was just really impressed. Whenever I first saw him, it was really impressive in his sort of controlled the back line, and not sure if we've been able to replace him. Although I'm quite happy with the players we've got in, I'm not sure we've managed to replace Kamikawa for like. And as well, he's gone to a sort of rival, as it were, in J1, which sort of isn't ideal, especially for us that are sort of tipped to be instantly relegated. It's not something that we want to have, really.
Yeah, so there's a couple of loan returns to J1 clubs, but yes, Kamikawa joining Fukuoka is the only out to a J1 team in terms of a permanent transfer. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he's replaced. But yeah, a number of players leaving the club to join J2 or even J3 outfits, and a number have been released or retired, as in the case of Shinsuke Nakamura. So there's a number of outs and a number of ins as well, 21 according to Michael Masters' spreadsheet. And again, refresh that in the last 5 minutes, so there might be one or two new ones since I last checked. Some new Brazilians in midfield and attack, Manny, a new Vietnamese player to warm the hearts of the J-League's social media team, no doubt. Which players are you most looking forward to seeing, and how do you think they'll be utilised by manager Shuhei Yomoda?
Oh, that's a good question. Out of all the sort of the new players I'm most intrigued by, it's not a foreign player, but a Japanese one, Mizuki Arai. He's probably the one that, you know, had a good reputation at Tokyo Verde. He had a loan spell in sort of in Portugal. So he seems like a good sort of character for our club. And in terms of sort of the newer members, I'm quite interested by Caprini. I think someone on Twitter mentioned he had a really good season in Serie B in Brazil, and it looked very promising. So that's a good one. And Duca as well is another good one, I think, especially for our defence, which has probably been the weakest part of our team. So he looks like a good addition to the squad. There's been lots of rumours about how how Yamada will sort of set up. And it's, I think he's going to put a lot of the newer players in, you know, with sort of Mita and Alara, Caprini just behind, sort of Ogawa, and even a new goalkeeper, Nagai, is apparently favoured over Bjornason. I saw the rumour mill goes, but I'm not sure how true that is.
Rightio. So, yeah, we had a question in from Chris, and I'll throw it to both of you. So, Sam, why don't you tackle this one first? Chris says, it seems like quite a chaotic transfer window for them, and teams who move that many players around after promotion never seem to do that well. Is it cruel to write them off completely, or can they buck the trend of teams who, yeah, I guess, throw the baby out with the bathwater and completely change things in the course of one off-season, which is completely the opposite side of strategy that employed by Niigata this off-season?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I don't think it's usually the ideal approach. But what they did is they got everyone in quite early. I mean, they had 21 signings, I think, by the beginning of January. So at least they've had a full pre-season, most of them, to really kind of try and gel together. And I guess if you're going to experiment like this and just throw everything at it, this is the season to do it, with only one team going down. They're still generally, as long as Brodersen is starting, and if it's the guy that throws things a little bit out, but they've still got kind of a solid core there that played last season in Brodersen, in Gabriel, Hasegawa in there, Wada should continue, and Ogawa. So you've still got that basis of a together team that came up from J2. So I don't think it's fair to write them off at all, especially this season with the one relegation battle. But it's going to be a really interesting comparison between these two promoted clubs, obviously going completely different routes about it. Maybe Niigata haven't done enough. Maybe Yokohama have done far too much. We'll see. But they're definitely interesting. Of all the teams that we've covered, I think, in pre-season, this kind of is the most fascinating. I know we use that word all the time, but yeah, just how this all comes together is just really intriguing.
Yes, I mean, you're right, Sam. It was the amounts of transfers was surreal. I couldn't keep up with it at one point, but it was relatively early on, and at this stage, with less than a week to go before kickoff, I can't see us having anything. Any other business in the market, unless something sort of drastically goes wrong. I mean, it's difficult. I think I feel it was a rather successful transfer period, if I'm honest. I feel like we sort of got rid of some of the older wood. We've freshened things up a bit with some young and promising talent. And they seem really positive. I see sort of training videos and they're all sort of seem quite happy together. But then, you know, traditional teams that have had a huge transfer activity haven't, you know, it's been difficult to gel. But I'm feeling strangely positive. I don't know whether that's because I'm a fan, but it doesn't feel too much. It reminds me a little bit of Nottingham Forest in the UK, maybe not quite as drastic, but you know, they're now getting sort of good results, so I hope we can replicate the same.
What do you remember thinking, Manny, at the end of last season after promotion was sealed, okay, we're really going to need to gut this squad and rebuild it? I mean, I guess at the end of a successful campaign like that, you're probably pretty happy with the players that have gotten you up in the first place. And as we said, Niigata have employed the strategy of basically keeping faith with the promotion squad and seeing how they'll fare in J1. And there's obviously merits to that policy, and we'll see how it plays out. But as you say, you're feeling quite positive about it. So I presume you're happy with the areas of the squad that they've addressed in clearing out some dead wood to begin with. And then hopefully not only reinforcing the squad, but yeah, strengthening it in some key areas. So yeah, it's really going to be terrifically interesting to see how both approaches work. Yeah, both yours and Niigata's. And there'll obviously be a lot of people listening to this podcast, a big pod, who, you know, occasionally listen to Extra Time, but don't follow J2 or J3 as closely as they do the top flight. So if you could, in summary, what did Mr. Yamada do so successfully to get you straight back up at the first time of asking? Because obviously, yeah, you went back down to J2 with your tails between your legs after finishing bottom at the end of the 2021 season. And as I said, the expectations weren't especially high. I don't think a lot of people had Yokohama FC in the top two of their J-preds at the start of last season. But yes, you were able to go up extremely comfortably in the end. So what did Mr. Yamada do in implementing his own ideas to the squad, and what worked particularly well from him, and what are you looking forward to him bringing into J1 this season?
I think his sort of tactics are generally a bit more defensive and perhaps a bit more negative, not in a necessarily bad way, but in a way that sort of plays as best as we can to our strengths. A lot of last season was long balls. We were particularly good at sort of set pieces, and really utilising our strength, which was primarily Ogawa. But Ogawa doesn't sort of necessarily make the chances. He's really good at finishing. So he needs people around him to sort of set him up, as it were. So he used particularly the balls from the back sort of to break down defences. For the J1, I'm not entirely sure whether with a bit more difficult defences, I'm not sure whether that will work quite the same. So I hope he plays a bit more passing on the ground. Definitely, I think if the rumours were right and he wants to change Brodison, then maybe he's looking to sort of play from the back. But that's never been really his style, so I'm not sure if sort of his, you know, coming back down from J1, having a successful J2, and then going back up, it'll change his style too much. But I think we've got to slightly adapt more than just a long ball up to Ogawa.
Yeah, fair enough then. All right, so as we do with each club, we give a couple of players to watch. And obviously, yeah, Johnny's not joining us on this particular episode, so I'll step in with one of my own. But Sam, who is your one to watch for Yokohama FC in 2023?
Yeah, it's one of the various new signings, and it's one with maybe the best name in Yuri Limalara. He's coming from Vasco da Gama, they finished fourth in Serie B, got promoted in Brazil last year, and he was like the linchpin in the holding midfield role. He played pretty much every minute of every game. It was vital to their success in that position, and I think that position in any league is so crucial to any team, and I think if he can be that kind of rock in midfield, plus, as I mentioned earlier, the spine that they already have in this team, if they can get that midfield right as well, and if he can adapt quickly, which it seems throughout pre-season that he has done, then I think, yeah, he is vital for protecting that defence, because generally it looks the weakest area on the team. I think Gabriel might have his work cut out with the rest of them looking at him. But, yeah, if he can provide that shield in there and he could also start off attacks, I think, yeah, he could be the most important signing that they've made this season. So, yeah, great name as well. I'd like to see him score goals. You said he was more a next generation Pokemon or something in our line group. So hopefully he lives up to that and he's better than Pikachu was last year.
I think Lara's a good one to watch, as is the young Vietnamese lad, Nguyen. If I'm saying that name right, I apologise in advance. But apparently he's a Vietnamese Messi. Which is a moniker that gets thrown around a lot. So it's interesting to see how he will perform, because we've had two Vietnamese players in the past who haven't sort of lived up to the expectations. It'd be interesting to see what he does. But I think definitely Lara is, or maybe Caprini as well.
Yeah, all right then. So mine would be Koki Ogawa, but I guess it's an easy choice. Although for J1 watchers, we've never really seen him do it at this level. He never scored more than 9 goals in any of his first 7 professional seasons before exploding for that gobsmacking total of 26 in 2022. So top flight watchers will be very interested to see how Ogawa has evolved as a player in his throughout his career. And he's certainly got a point to prove, I'm sure, to himself, as well as to show everybody else what he's capable of in the top flight. But I did want to also give a special mention to Saulo Mineiro, who Sam and I remember from the closing stages of the 2021 season, when he looked like a peak Adriano from his Inter Milan days. He was absolutely unplayable at times, and for a fleeting moment there, it looked like he might be the man to fire Yokohama FC to an unlikely safety at the end of that season. But of course, it was ultimately too little, too late. But he looked just electric, and as I said, unplayable at times. So if he is fit and firing, then and if he has Yamada's trust, then I'm looking forward to seeing him back in the top flight. And I think just before we let you go, Manny, maybe we should address a bit of an elephant in the room from Yokohama FC's off season. you go behind the goals at Mitsuzawa. So what was your overall thoughts on the club's now aborted decision to basically look for new call leaders and fans for hire behind the goal, basically?
Yes, it's an interesting situation. The stadium itself is really compact, and it really lends itself to a really good crowd, and the guys behind the goal are really, really supportive of the club, and they follow them all over. But there's apparently been some issues. We don't know what sort of necessarily those issues have been, but there's been some disagreements between the sort of the main supporters group and the sort of the ownership of the club. And their sort of remedy, the club's remedy, was to sort of force people to sort of sign up, and then sort of, like you saw, sign up for the drum leader, which was just a terrible, terrible idea. I think it was uniformly unpopular. And they've also been trying to do a thing called Hammer Blue, making sure that everyone behind a goal wears some form of blue. But how they police that, I don't really know. With the controversy with the drum leader and stuff, that's been put on the back burner for now. So I think the club might look at it later. But at the moment, it seems everything sort of back to normal, as it were. But yeah, it was rather slightly upsetting just a few weeks before the kickoff. You know, the thought of having sort of no sort of cheering, or, you know, the cheering being very sort of regimented, it was a bit off-putting.
Yeah, sort of distraction that you didn't need, your return back up to J1. But as you say, it looks like it's been sorted out to a degree between the club and the active support behind the goal. So, we hope all the fans at Mitsuzawa will be in full voice throughout the season. Sam, Kai asks, who doesn't have Yokohama FC to get relegated in JPRED 2023? Do you?
Oh, I don't know. To be decided. They're in the three. I've got a three that are going around my head of Yokohama, Kyoto and Avispa. And I've still not decided, and I won't make my decision until I have to click send on my JPRED.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I mean, yeah, I think a lot of people will have Yokohama FC there or thereabouts, but I don't think me personally, I don't think they're clearly the worst squad in the league necessarily. So again, it will play out on the pitch. We'll wait and see. But how are you feeling, Manny? How confident are you that you will be 17th at worst in your return to the top flight?
Strangely optimistic. I don't know, like, whether it's because of our transfer activity, or, you know, we've been in the J1 before, we've had that experience, but, you know, I think we're in a better position than when we went last time. So I think we have the ability to, you know, to have a better performance than we did last time, at least. And we definitely have enough to avoid that final position, I think, at least. It'll still be tight. I'm not expecting us to, you know, romp up the table, but I think we've got it in us to, you know, make ourselves proud and perhaps avoid relegation.
Okay, well, yeah, we're wishing Yokohama FC all the best on their return to the top flight this year. You can follow Manny on Twitter at YokohamaFSG. And, yeah, Manny, thanks for joining us. And yeah, we hope to catch up with you throughout the season and follow along with Yokohama FC's adventures back up in the top flight. Thanks again, mate.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. All the best for the new season.
Yeah, thanks again to Manny. Terrific to connect with him and yeah, get his thoughts on Yokohama FC ahead of the new campaign. And obviously, always great to get a new club correspondent amongst the J-Talk ranks. So yeah, we definitely hope to speak to Manny as the season goes along. All right, next it's yes, the other half of Yokohama, if you like, the defending champions, Yokohama F Marinos. We teased this to the patrons last midweek. So yeah, Alex from the Kai Guys helped us preview FC Tokyo, so we had to throw it to the Tricolor podcast guys to help us preview the defending champions. So in this mini pod, you'll hear from Tony Pratik, and the first voice you'll hear is Stuart Woodwards.
Welcome to the Marinos rundown for the start of the season 2023. So on the line we have Tony in Melbourne.
Hello everyone.
And also Pratik in Yokohama.
Hey everyone.
Yep. So we've all been watching Marinos over the last year, Pratik at the stadium and Tony at home. So we're going to try and give a summary of what we think about Marinos this year and what we think will go on. So, at the very start, a brief review of 2022. So, of course, Marinos took the title, and you know that was the best result we could have hoped for. So, I'm overall very happy with how things went. It was a little bit shaky towards the end, but that might have been a bit nerves, or it might just have been, you know, the opponents playing up to their best level to try and knock us out because they've got nothing else to lose. So what did you guys think of the season overall? Over to you, Tony.
Yeah, I thought, obviously it was a very good season. We got the title. I wasn't early in the season and even mid-season. I didn't think that, even though we were doing fairly well, I didn't really think that we'd have the legs maybe to do it. And just with that run home the last few games, you know, as you said, a couple of other teams really took it to us, like Gamba and Jubilee really gave us a bit of a fright there. But, you know, luckily we did pull it out in the last couple to get over that possible shock ending to the season. I think everyone else was hoping for us to fall, but luckily we did the job. I think, was it Nagoya? And who was the last one we played? Kobe, yeah. So, yeah, very happy with it. Surprising. Urawa and Kobe, yeah.
Yeah, so how did you feel about it, Pratik?
Yeah, I mean, I felt that after, Maeda Tyson went to Celtic, we would miss a striker because he was so prolific, 2021 season. But as it progressed, we saw that Elber, he took over and he was the outstanding player for me last season, from all the attackers. And yeah, I mean we were doing well in 2021 as well. But the only difference is that Kawasaki didn't falter in 2021. So in terms of points per match, we were almost same. Even 2021 was better actually. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of teams helped us in defeating Kawasaki. And, so they dropped a lot of points around June and July. And that's when we went up. And it was all over, like with four matches to go, 8 points, we had a buffer. But then that Juvilo game and Gamba game happened, and we had to at least win once and draw once, and we won both of them, and that was it. Yeah, it was a nice season, all in all. Yeah, we really enjoyed. Yeah,
I was looking at the season totals, and actually, I think we won the same number of matches as Kawasaki, but we drew more and they lost more. So as you said, you know, we were helped out by the other teams, and you know, I always say that, you know, you can't win the league without the cooperation of other teams, because the you know, your major opponents have to drop some. But in terms of the year's highlight, I think for me, going to Kashima and winning away at Kashima, that was really great match, and it, you know, we couldn't have done it without that result. Okay, so I'm going to carry on, and so first of all, we'll talk about the major outs in this transfer season. So it's very lucky that we're doing this at the very end of the transfer season, because the major out that we had was our goalkeeper Takaoka going off to America. And reading the press about that, which seems to have come directly from the club front office, they really threw him under the bus, saying that like his agent was trying to negotiate double his salary before the winter break, and then he had offers, but he didn't take them, and he signed his contract to carry on for another year. But then suddenly, after he'd signed his contract, he begged them to leave to take up a revised contract. So they were really making it obvious that they weren't happy. You know, we've heard that Kevin definitely wasn't happy with the situation. And the club also wanted to make it clear that it was unlike previous year when Thiago left for New York, and in that Takaoka didn't give them any chance to arrange a substitute. So I'll stop there in my comments about it. But how do you feel, Tony?
Yeah, I was a bit surprised by all that. I don't know. Probably naively, you expect a bit more loyalty from a title-winning goal, you know, major team member. But you know, it's professional football, and if you're getting the chance to go overseas, I suppose you want to jump at it. Before the news of Takaoka leaving, I would have said that Nakagawa leaving was my big out. Even though he's become kind of he'd become fairly much a bit player for us over the last couple of years. Last year, he did seem to be getting closer to his form that we saw in 2019. And I think altogether, he hit about 13 goal contributions, 7 goals, 6 assists. So that's a lot of goals to try and find from somewhere else. So, after Takaoka, I'd say Nakagawa is probably our next biggest loss.
Yeah, Nakagawa for me as well, like, is a big loss. I always try to, like, give some sort of, new stat. Like, last season, he was the first one to score for us and the last one. So it's quite funny he left, so, in the title-winning season after that. As far as Takaoka is concerned, it was really surprising. And for him, professionally, moving to MLS with a team, I don't know whether he can hope to win the title. That's also a thing. I mean, he could have been here and he could have improved his career much more, I guess. I mean, that's what I think. He has more chance to be a national team keeper by being in Japan.
Yeah.
What's your opinion?
That was one of the things that the club also said, that we understand that he has ambitions to be a national team keeper, but they said, but this is a very strange way about going about it. So they, yeah, you know, that was, I think, maybe his motivation, that he wanted to play overseas. Some offers in Europe didn't pan out, so kind of thought, okay, it's my last chance, and goodbye. So that was it.
I was just going to say, Vancouver aren't great defensively, so he's really opening himself up. If they don't do well, he'll be the one in the firing line. Everyone will be looking at him. So, it's a bit of a risky move for mine. And just very quickly on Iwata leaving, which is, you'd think the MVP, that would be a big out. I tend to think Kida and Watanabe have been doing well in midfield, and Fujita is ready to come in. And I think we might have recruited well, actually, as well, at the back, but we can talk about that later.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I wouldn't say I'd forgotten about Iwata, but it seems so long ago that he left that I've kind of got used to the feeling that he won't be around. And as we know, he hasn't really made his place at Celtic yet, so he's a bit off my radar. But it was a bit of a surprise for us that he got the Player of the Year, and I know other people were surprised too, but maybe that is more because that he didn't show himself in any bad way that we would remember that he slipped up in the previous year. So his constant good performance was noticed by somebody. So that was good. So I think that probably covers the outs. We didn't have many outs, but we actually had a few suspected outs. Like we didn't think that Marcos was coming back. He definitely looked to be leaving. Heard that Joel was also looking for a place in Europe, and I wouldn't be surprised if he went in the summertime. It wouldn't be good for us, but I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. And also looking at last year's ins, everybody was great, I think.
Yeah.
The more senior players, like Nishimura was great, Koike was good, and Joel was expected to be like kind of on the sidelines, but he played quite a major part in some matches. Nagata, he became top team member very quick, and really the only people who didn't thrive at all, I think, was Tala, who came back from Machida, never made an impact at all. I think only sub in one match, and then he's off to FC Osaka. So that was about it. And it was quite a clean out, I think, of some of the loan players and youth players. They've all been either reloaned or transferred out. So not a big change to the top team. In terms of the players coming in, in replacement for our goalkeeper, we have the return of Ikura. So that brings great amusement to us because we all love him so much. But his sometimes crazy antics have definitely lost us some matches, and he was the one of the deciding factors in 2018, I think, for how Marinos did. But I think he's loved by the goalkeeping coaching staff, so I would see him more on the bench taking over if Obi fails. But he does have competition because we have at least one new goalkeeper this year. Yes, that's right. Shirasaka. So somebody told me, who was it, told me that Shirasaka was playing for Honda, but he'd been a university student, but didn't actually take up football seriously after university. And he was working for Honda and joined the company team, which is the Honda FC, and did very well
so
there.
He came in from Kagoshima, right?
That's right. Yeah. So he was recruited by Kagoshima from Honda, and Honda are still one of those. You would call them an amateur team. They're really a company team. The players are working for Honda and playing for the team itself.
But we can't forget them because of 2021 Emperor's Cup defeat.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with these teams. They, they play in their league, but their one big chance is knocking out a team in the Emperor's Cup first round when they play against the top teams. So that's their whole championship in a way, to just get one win on that match, and they will be heroes for their company and for their fans. So yeah, he's a good goalkeeper who's recognised, 24 years old, and he was on the bench for the Fujifilm Cup that we watched yesterday. So let me just have a quick look at the other incomers. So we have Asahi Uenaka. He was playing for Nagasaki, I think 49 games for them, 15 goals. He comes in as a forward. We have Takumi Kamijima, 25 years old, from Reysol, and he played his first match yesterday, covering for at the side. He's normally a centre back, I think, so he's already got his place. But that was due to injury of the other guys, and then Inoue Kenta's coming in, 24 years old, from Oita, is in the midfield. And we mentioned Shirasaka. And then Takuto Kimura, 22 years old, youth player from, former Marinoth youth player, and studied at Meiji University, was in the All Japan University Soccer Best 4 in 2021. Then Keigo Sakakibara, also a Marinos youth player, and he was playing in Aomori, so Linemere Aomori. He played 60 games in JFL, so he's had quite experience. And Murakami Yuhi from Hokkaido, and he played at university level at Kanto Gakuin. So overall, we've got almost all the players under 25 that came in. So, or 25 and under. So I think Kevin mentioned that in the initial team review when he announced the new team, that one of their goals was to have a younger squad to build for the future. But still, that really is no increase in experience really in the squad this year. So what do you think, Tony? You think they're going to make it?
Look, there's a couple there that stood out to me. Quickly on Uenaka, he seems to be the Nakagawa replacement, and I can't make any claim to have seen much of him in the past, but I have just checked some highlights before this, and very much right-sided attacking midfielder or forward, got a good dribble, very quick, and can deliver a cross or can find a pass into the middle for a striker. So I think he'll fit in the system very well. The one that stands out for me is Kamijima, and we saw him yesterday. He was actually playing as captain for Avispa at one point when he was loaned to them from Reysol. And he looks really good. He looks like he can really know how to time a tackle. He's really strong aerially. He's brave. He'll throw himself into challenges in the air and on the ground. He's pretty good at corners, at set pieces on his head, and good on a one-on-one defensive situation as well. So I think that going forward, he'll be challenging for one of the starting centre-back places. Obviously, like we saw yesterday with the injuries, he may be filling in as a fullback for a while. But yeah, I'm like really positive about him. I didn't know much about him before, but once I did some research for this, I realised he's possibly a really good player.
Great. So I don't think we've seen much of the players yet. What do you think? Pratik, do you think we will do okay without Nakagawa? And
yeah, the core of the team is almost the same. Yeah, Nakagawa is a big loss, as I told earlier. Like, I mean, he played a big part in 2019 win, right? And he was the MVP. And 2022 also, he played a very significant part. And one position that I feel we didn't fill up was center forward when Leo Sierra left, right? So right now we only have, I think, Anderson Lopez. So if he gets substituted, then either Nishimura or Marcos Jr. have to play that position, right? Or if he gets injured, then, yeah, we need to find a way. Right, we have to change the formation or something. Yeah. And yeah, Reysol looks I mean, we found replacement, as you told, Kamijima. Yeah, he's not a like-for-like for Iwata, because Iwata was playing midfield as well. So yeah, that's a big loss actually for me, Iwata. So we, of course, when there's a defender who gets the MVP, we wonder why, but like... attackers, we know them, they're good by the kind of goals they score. But defenders, we don't know that very often, because they stand out when they only make mistakes. So, yeah, so that's a big position that we want to fill it up. Hope Kamijima will do that. Yeah, that's my assessment.
Just going back to that, I should point out, I was actually talking about Inoue being the Teru replacement, not Uenaka. I mixed the two up there a bit.
Okay. Well, I think that about rounds it up for our 2023 pre-season summary. So hope you enjoyed that, and back to Ben.
Thank you very much, Stuart. All right, then. So, yeah, it's sure to be a fascinating season ahead for the defending champions, Sam. Yes, a number of key outs. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they do this year and what they can do for an encore. Do you have any overall thoughts on, either the outs or the ins before we each name a one to watch?
Yeah, generally, I think the outs are really difficult to recover from. I mean, Iwata, MVP last year, is two positions that he was covering, and I'm not 100% sure Kamijima is a good enough replacement for Iwata, certainly not on the same level as him. And yeah, midfield, I think I mentioned it right at the start of this, I think Fujita, Watanabe, Kida, that's fine. So that's not the worst thing. But then Takeoka leaving right before the start of the season, I think that's going to, well, it's not confirmed fully yet, but it's almost certain. And that is a major blow, because it was the consistent goalkeeper last season. They've done all pre-season with him, and now all be young goalkeeper still just being thrown in. I think that's very difficult. I don't know what Marinos were doing, to be honest. If he'd had the opportunity to leave earlier in the window and didn't take it, so he signed a new contract. Now he wants to leave. The club have just got to say no. just say, no, we haven't got time to replace you. We don't want to bring Hiroki Ikura back to potentially play. And he should have been there until at least the summer, so they had an idea of how to move on from him. So I think he left the club in a poor position, but the club really, in my opinion, should have stood their ground. So that's a major blow to lose your first choice goalkeeper. And then the others, Leo Sierra and Nakagawa, people will say they weren't first choice last season, but I think Marinos won their title based on the depth, based on Leo Sierra, the second choice striker, being joint top scorer with Anderson Lopez with 11. And we mentioned Nakagawa as his goals and assists in the last episode for FC Tokyo. It's not not a small amount, 7 and 6, I think it was. So, they've lost quite a lot. They've tried to go with youth for their replacements in Uenaka, who's come in from Nagasaki, who I think has got good potential, but is he ready to really be the genuine backup to Anderson Lopez? I'm not so sure. Likewise with Kenta Inoue, is he good enough at this moment in time to be the genuine backup to Mizunuma? Again, I don't think he's quite at that level. And Kamijima, I don't think he's shown much at Kashua to suggest that he can take over from Iwata. So I think this is a weaker squad. There's still a lot of quality in there. I still wouldn't be surprised if they retained the league title. I think this is much more of a challenging season than it was last year. What are your general thoughts on the way that Marinos are shaping up?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. They're going to be difficult players to replace. As you said, Sierra and Nakagawa weren't regular starters. But, combined 18 goals out of their tally of 70. They have to be replaced if they're going to stay ahead of teams like Kawasaki and Hiroshima and maybe a couple of teams from slightly lower down the table who have loftier ambitions. So teams will definitely be gunning for them this year, and it's going to be a real test of Kevin Muscat's mettle. He's obviously silenced every single one of his doubters with a top flight title last year in his first full season in charge, after there were some questions raised at the end of the 2021 season. But Muscat, I'm sure he's absolutely licking his chops to get going again, because with a challenging off season that they've had in the transfer market, then he'll be looking to prove people wrong yet again. And who would bet against him? They are certain to be up in and around the top four, and if they can go on this sort of runs that they went on last year, and obviously their attacking depth was so important to them last year, wasn't it, Sam? So that is definitely going to be tested this year. But I'm sure they will be up there, no worries at all. So who have you gone for in terms of a one to watch for the defending champions this season?
Yeah, and another young player, Joel Fujita, I've mentioned plenty of times. He's got all the talent in the world. I think there are still areas of his game that he needs to work on. I'm sure he'll still get a lot of game time this year. First, he's got to try and eke out Watanabe and Kida, who started at the weekend and look like the first choice partnership. But I think there's a lot to like about Fujita. Whenever he played last year, you know that he's got something. It's just maybe final decision that's slightly lacking, or maybe just slight movement or slight positional awareness is slightly lacking. But 20 years of age, he'll definitely grow, definitely get chances in this team. And it's another one a bit like Matsuki, who again could go on a run and then be off to Europe. So he's definitely my one to watch. I think he's got the most promise out of anyone, any young player in this squad. So hopefully we'll see him grow a bit more this year, because last year he made himself into he got into the national team, didn't he, towards the end of the year. It was not the full national squad really, but it's still definitely in the reckoning, isn't he? So hopefully he can go on from that. How about you? Who catches your eye in this squad?
Well, initially it would have been my old mate Kota Mizunuma, because I think a lot more responsibility goes onto his shoulders now with Nakagawa out the door. Whether Muscat will throw him straight to the Wolves, I'm not sure. So I would expect Mizunuma to have a lot more responsibility placed on his shoulders. But of course, I've just spoken about him for 2 minutes, but he's not my one to watch. It's the goalkeeper for Yokohama F. Marinos. It wasn't something I was initially planning on talking talking about. But yes, as you say, the Takaoka situation is, well, it's just a bit of a shambles, really. And even if the Vancouver move falls through, it sounds like Takaoka's burnt, pretty much burnt his bridge with Muscat. So he would you'd definitely have to serve some time, I think, on the naughty step if it doesn't work out. But yeah, simply put, yeah, Orbi Palobina is not really tested at this level. Only started the first five games of the 2021 season after playing four games in the ACL in 2020. And that's basically what that's his first team experience in the top flight in Japan for F. Marinos is. So yeah, I'm sure he's going to get a chance to stake the claim. It would be just horrible flashbacks for F. Marinos supporters the first time Hiroki Ikura dashes out of his box. So I'm not sure if Muscat wants to put F. Marinos supporters through that again. But yeah, the goalkeeping situation is fascinating. And I'm sure by the first few weeks of the season, Sam Muscat might be looking jealously over at his neighbours Seonnan Bellmare and Son Boom-kyung in that team. He could have been F. Marinos' player had they got wind of Takaoka's hijinks a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I think it's just really poor form from Takaoka not to have made that decision early, because he's left his team in the lurch. I was so worried when Ikaru was announced. I mean, just flashbacks, it's just horrible. Because some of his performances, and I was thinking, I mean, they're not going to put him straight into the team, are they? Because I immediately dropped Marinov down to about 10th in my J-print when he was coming in, just out of fear. But thankfully, Obi looked quite good in the Super Cup. Not overly tested, but very good with his feet, very calm, no sorts of errors. So it looked decent, because he had that year at Tochigi, which is a completely different environment to F. Marinov, down as generally strugglers in J2, and the last time I saw him in a Marinos shirt, other than a couple of cup ties, was that Champions League game. I think he made a couple of really poor errors right at the end of that, that was the last I'd seen of him. So yeah, he looked like he's improved. He looks like he looked confident. So hopefully for him that continues, because the moment Ikura comes into the side, I think that's the end of any chance of a Marinos title.
Yes, indeed. All right. So, yeah, they're the defending champions. We'll wait and see how they go defending their title. But, yeah, Kevin Muscat, as I said, will, I'm sure, have his team as best prepared as they can be for Friday night's big opener. Sam, I don't think I need to ask you what your pick of the weekend is, because, the teams that finished second and first last season are facing off to raise the curtain on the J-League's 30th anniversary season on Friday night at Todoroki. So, I guess, how about a pick? Maybe a best of the rest, as there are the other eight games take place on Saturday, with six at 2 p.m. and the other two at 3 p.m. Japan time. So, plenty of mouthwatering games on the slate apart from Friday night's opener. So what are some other games that you've got your eye on?
Yeah, there's lots that I really think should be good games on Saturday. The first one, the other team that we've had in this episode, Yokohama FC, I am fascinated to see how the chips lie with Yokohama and their multitude of players. What do they look like? Can Koki Ogawa make that step up into J1? And they're against Nagoya, who were maybe my most, I've got them very high in my J-print, well, maybe too high, and it might come back crashing down in this first game, but that's partnership of Mateus and Juncker, I'm fascinated to see how that works for Grampus. It's going to be a really interesting game, and so that one at 5 o'clock, well, 5 o'clock my time, what's that your time?
Yeah, 2 p.m.
Also, I might let you talk about Tokyo Reds, which again looks like a fascinating tie between two teams wanting to be in the ACL. But other than that, I'm going to go Cerezo Osaka versus Albirex Niigata as well, because Niigata so good last year. What can they do? Can they make that step up into J1? I think always on the opening day, I hate Kawasaki Marinos being an opener. It doesn't need to be that. It's such a big game. It's going to draw a big crowd whenever you put it in the season. So I think this is a sort of game that I look forward to. A newly promoted side against a team that's challenging for the ACL. And yes, Cerezo, Shinji Kagawa potentially back, could be some sort of fanfare. That should be really interesting. And Shunsuke Mito, I'm going to very much enjoy watching on a week-to-week basis. So that should be a really nice open game. So, but you could pick it from any of these. Let you speak about your feelings on FC Tokyo, and then any other games you got your eye on.
Yeah, while I'm generally positive about Tokyo season ahead, which regular listeners know is quite unlike me, yeah, I'm never positive or optimistic about Tokyo playing Urawa, either home or away, because it's one of the fixtures that we desperately want to win. And over the journey, again, you could throw a stat in my face that proves me wrong, but yeah, maybe it's just my negativity coming out. I don't think we have a generally positive record against Red. So it's a fixture, I guess, in equal measure. I look forward to, but I dread, because I dread being on the wrong end of it. But hopefully, yeah, Albert Pucci will have his side as best prepared as they can be, and hopefully that will be good enough to take down Ralph's Urawa Reds. We shall wait and see. But yeah, the other game that I'd like to pick out is another one at 2 o'clock, and it's Hiroshima hosting Sapporo, last year's third place team, hosting the great entertainers for both the good and the bad reasons, of course, Consadole. So yeah, that should be a great game as the Hiroshima kick off Michael Skipper's second season in charge with ambitions to go much better than last season's third place finish. And Sam, yeah, you think they can?
Yes, I really do. I think they've got everything about them. I think the other two teams in Kawasaki and Marinos falling off a little bit, I think they will. They've definitely got weaker. And I think another year under Skipper gives Hiroshima a really good chance. And I think Sapporo is a nice team to open with. Obviously, on their day, they can beat anyone, but they're going to be open. You're going to be able to express yourself. And I think Mitsuta and Morishima are just kind of mouth-watering against their Misha Petrovic defence. So, yeah, that's another really interesting game. And I think Hiroshima can get off to a good start and, yeah, hopefully prove my incoming J-Pred right.
Okay, then. Yes, indeed. All right, so that's it then. We've previewed all 18 J1 clubs ahead of the new season getting going this weekend. And yes, we'll be back to react or overreact to the results of all 9 games in next week's episode, listeners. But yes, this might not be the last you hear of us this week. Our patrons, I think I can guarantee that is the case. And we might be putting at least one more podcast out from the Big Pod stable for the general listenership to enjoy as well. But watch this space and watch at JTalkPod on Twitter for updates on what we've got cooking for the rest of the week. So, Sam, what can I say? It's been quite a journey, but it hasn't even started yet, has it? The last 4 weeks, we've previewed all 18 clubs in detail. Obviously, we have to give a huge shout out to Johnny Nicol for all his help along the way, and to all of our patrons who contributed questions as well. We couldn't have done it without them and all of their involvement. It's been absolutely tremendous over the last 4 weeks. And as I say, we're just getting going.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. It's been a marathon. I could do with a lie down before the season started after all the episodes. But yeah, it's great. Johnny, especially, thank you for everything you did. And thanks to all the guests that we've had on for the various clubs. Everyone brought something to the table. I thought they're all very interesting guests. And it was great to get a wide range of opinions on plenty of teams. And hopefully that can continue for the rest of the season. But yeah, let's get on with it. I can't wait now for Friday's opener.
Indeed. Hear, hear. All right, then. So, yes, from this episode, we'd like to thank Manny very much for his time in part one. And, of course, Tony, Pratik and Stuart from the Tree Caller podcast for their fantastic mini pod in part two. And that's it, listeners. Thanks to you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to overreact to all 9 games from J1 match day one. Speak to you then. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.